1340 96.5 KVGC. We are going to interrupt Rod Stewart for a moment here. We have Dr. Rita Kerr, Amador County Health Officer, on the phone with us today. Dr. Kerr, thank you very much for taking time out of your schedule. We have some questions that we would like to ask you, and if there's any information that you want to share with us as well, please do. The first one that I would like to ask you is, there's been a rumor going around for at least the last 24 hours that there is an employee, a pharmacist at a local pharmacy that has tested positive for the COVID virus, and people are worried, should they go into that store? Should they throw their medications away? And so we just wanted to reach out to you and ask you if you can help us or answer any of those questions.
Absolutely, Jim. That's why I'm on the phone with you now, because the health department has been alerted to this situation, and we are actively investigating it and trying to tease out all the details. The first thing I want to say is that people should absolutely not throw their medication away. They need their medication to stay healthy. In general, pharmacists and pharmacy staff never actually touch your pills with their bare hands. They have tools to do their jobs that get those pills out of the stock bottle, counted, and into the bottle that gets dispensed to the customer. And they're never actually physically handled. So the pills inside the bottle are perfectly safe to take. That being said, it might be wise to take a cleaning wipe and just wipe off the outside of any bottles that you may have picked up at the pharmacy in the last few days. You know, we've been talking a lot about community transmission and keeping surfaces clean and washing your hands frequently. That would extend to, you know, the outside surfaces of things that you may bring into your home, to give them a quick wipe down, wash your hands before and after doing that.
So, Dr. Kerr, to answer the question, the health department has been made aware of this, and they are looking into this.
Right. So we have been told that there is an individual that may have tested positive that lives in another area but works here, very similar to what we were looking into earlier in the week, and we are still tracking down the details on that. We have not been able to verify specifically any positive test. That being said, it's possible that if somebody's ill and had a test collected and is awaiting results, they were instructed to take all the precautions as if they had COVID-19. So being cautious, they alerted their employer, and the employer's taking all the appropriate steps to make sure that anyone who was exposed is given instructions in quarantine, that sanitation of the physical space has been done, and that a new crew of people who have not been exposed are brought in to staff the location.
Dr. Kerr, Jack Mitchell just stepped in here too.
See, I ran down the street. You get all of us at once again, Dr. Kerr.
Hi, Jack.
He's huffing and puffing too.
Hey, I was checking. Sorry, I came in a little late. Have you seen any studies on how long COVID-19 lasts on different surfaces?
I've seen some preliminary data, and it really sort of depends on the surface. It looks like the longest surface that it can last on seems to be plastics, and I've seen numbers out to 72 hours on plastics, and that's another good reason to wipe off the outside of pill bottles for things that have come into the house in the last few days, just to take some dilute bleach solution or a cleaning wipe. Really, even if you don't want to do that, just any soap that foams, Dawn dish liquid is great because it foams up and it breaks up all the fatty outside of the virus. You know, just dunk them in some soapy water, rinse them off in hot water, and let them dry, and that will help to diminish any viral load on the surfaces.
What about the heat or the cold? Does that affect it?
I'm not as certain yet. You're talking about weather, heat, or cold?
Yeah. Or let's say I have something, I leave it outside, and it's, you know, chilly outside, or it's hot, and I put it inside the house. Can the virus live on stuff that's hot or cold?
Well, I will tell you what I know, which is that many viruses like this don't do well in UV light. And so sunlight contains UV rays. That's why mm-hmm. we get sunburned. So UV light generally helps get rid of viral and bacterial particles outdoors.
So we're going to be all sunburned, masked.
No, I'm
people
talking about if you leave whatever you talked about leaving outside.
Yeah.
Heat, when we're doing laundering instructions, for example, bed linens on someone who's in a home with someone who's ill, we say to use the hottest setting that the fabric will tolerate, both in the washer and the dryer. Okay. So we think that heat does do some work. And also, the warmer water is better when you're washing your hands. The reason hand washing works is twofold. One is that the virus gets the outer covering, the lipid layer that protects the virus's genetic material, gets busted up by the soap suds, and then the water washes them down the drain.
Gotcha.
Do you know in Amador County, do you know how many tests have been done for Amador County?
Oh, see, the challenge was saying exactly how many tests is. I have an idea of how many have been collected here.
Uh-huh.
Which is into the hundreds at this point,
mm-hmm.
but they're not all county residents that come to our county to get tested. People from other areas, other neighboring counties seek medical care here.
And
also, many Amador County residents go down to Kaiser or the VA
or
other places to get their care. And so we are seeing a mixture of results come in from in and out of county residents that have been collected here. And we are also seeing results come into us that were collected elsewhere.
So I guess the other question I'd have is the on the testing, we've seen a lot on the news, certainly about the testing time when they take it, trying to come up with a faster way to test, the
uh-huh.
backlog of can you talk a little bit about what you're seeing as far as locally the test time, as what results coming back? Is there a backlog? Are there new tests that are faster than tests originally?
So part of the testing backlog just has to do with volume. So the original tests way back in the beginning of, or middle of February into the first week or so of March, all the testing first was done at the CDC, and then they were able to deploy it out to state and regional public health labs, and now public health labs have a small role in testing because as of March 9th, a couple of commercial labs came on, which included Quest and LabCorp. Now, they cannot collect those tests at the usual phlebotomy draw stations. They have to be collected in a healthcare setting where the staff is wearing all the appropriate protective gear. They take a certain type of swab. They swab the through the nose into the back of the throat, and they sometimes also collect a second swab through the mouth into the back of the throat. They put those in a tube. They send them off to the lab. And then the labs can run them in batches. What happened during that first week is those that were collected the very first couple days, we were seeing results back in about 3 days, and then they got just slammed and very backlogged, and we were waiting for results out past 10 days from some of those samples at that point. Just this past week, some of the hospital and university hospital labs came on, and their turnaround times have been a little bit quicker again, back into the couple of days range. So it's kind of all over the board depending on when it was collected and where it is in the queue at any particular lab. The other thing that you might start seeing on the news is that there are some point-of-care tests just being authorized by the FDA under the Emergency Use Authorization Protocol. And what point of care means is that the test is collected and resulted at the same visit. What these look like and how reliable they're going to end up being is still in question. We have had point of care testing for things like strep throat and flu for a while, but we also know that in general, for example, the flu point of care tests are not as reliable as the ones that get sent to the lab where the genetic material is actually looked for. So even though that sounds promising, it's not quite ready for prime time as a strategy
sure.
yet.
Dr. Kerr, I got a couple more questions. One of them is, how are we doing with flattening our curve here in Amador County?
Well, if the number of positives that we've seen, which of residents is still at 3, is any indication, that is good news. The hospitalization rate in this county has not overwhelmed our healthcare system. So that is good news. And I think that people cooperating with the stay at home, the social distancing, all absolutely helps us.
Now
the additional thing that came out yesterday is the cover your face.
And that we talked about originally real early on,
yeah,
when you're saying, man, I'm going to be messing with my, I'm going to be touching my face because I got this mask on. But they
right.
did come out yesterday or the day before yesterday,
mm-hmm.
CDC, and said, hey, masks are something. So now we're all like wearing,
well,
looking
so
at masks. So
let's talk about what the messaging is and why it. I think when people understand the why, it's a whole lot easier to figure out and comply.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So there is a lot of debate about what the role for covering the face of the general populace is in an outbreak like this. And when it becomes important is when community transmission reaches the point where there are probably people who don't even know they're affected circulating in the community and may have minimal symptoms but could possibly transmit the virus to others. So the purpose of covering the face in the community setting is not to protect yourself. It's to protect other people from you.
Right.
So if you have your face covered and you could be incubating this and you're not even sure whether the, you know, sore throat you woke up with this morning is the first possible sign of something, if you've got your face covered, you're much less likely to cough or sneeze germs out that land on a surface or get inhaled by somebody else.
Dr. Kerr, what about we're going to be coming into 3 or 4 more days of rain and wet weather, snow. Do the particles travel easier when it's drier than it is in the wet? I know that may seem like a funny question.
No,
but
it's not. I actually heard an infectious disease specialist address this on a commonly asked questions radio program about a week ago. And the 6-foot distancing that is used for social distance, physical distance guidance is actually about double of what the usual cough or sneeze travels. And the reason they put that cushion there is to account for things like wind and the ambient environment.
Okay.
So that's why that 6-foot is there, and it accounts for those sorts of variables.
So back to the mask. Should we be wearing masks? Should we be? And if we can't have masks, I saw
bandana,
a gentleman out here who was wearing a bandana. Looked like an old
yep.
West, you know, had one of those red bandanas
it's gonna
on.
Look like the Wild West
yeah.
again. Exactly.
I mean, should we be doing that?
At this point, healthcare workers and first responders, we need to reserve our masks, our N95 masks, our simple surgical and procedure and ear loop masks. We need to reserve those for the people who are on the front lines, taking care of individuals.
Mm-hmm.
For the rest of the public, if you can make a homemade mask, I know there's a lot of talented quilters and seamstresses out there who've been working on these for weeks. This is for the general public to wear when you're out of your house in public. If you're alone in your car or at home, you don't need to have a mask on all the time. But when you're going out to do something, covering your face will help protect others. You can substitute a bandana, 100% cotton, fold it over so it's 2 layers, and use that. You can use a neck gaiter. You could use a scarf. The thing is, doing that doesn't mean that you stop keeping your social distance. You need to maintain that 6 feet social
sure.
distance.
What about the cleanliness of a mask? How often
yeah.
can how
yeah.
many times can you wear a mask? If
well,
I go out today and come in, do I need to get a new mask tomorrow when I go out?
Or your bandana?
What we're recommending is laundering it in hot water at least once a day. So if you only do laundry once a week, you probably need 7 bandanas, and you know, throw them straight into the washer at the end of the day, and then you're going to run them in a load once a week. The other thing is we recommend always wash your hands before and after touching that mask, because you want it before so you don't infect yourself when you put it on, and after because if the outer surface of it is contaminated from something, you want to, you know, wash that off your hands right away. That's true of any kind of mask, or any time you're putting gear on your face, you always
sure.
wash your hands before and after.
And Dr. Kerr, the only way this is transmitted is through a sneeze or, you know, through saliva, and it has to go into your mouth or your nose. Is that
eyes, nose, or mouth?
Eyes, nose, or mouth. Okay.
And if you have virus on your hands, you can introduce it into your body through eyes, nose, or mouth.
Gotcha.
It is most frequently transmitted through respiratory droplets.
Mm-hmm.
It's still being studied whether stool or urinary shedding could happen, and that's one of the reasons that we suggest particularly bathroom cleaning is super important if you have somebody in the house who's sick with a respiratory illness.
Right. Now, I talked to Amador County Unified School District Superintendent Slavinsky this morning briefly on the air, and I posed the question to her, what is the criteria to come back to school, you know, to be able to, and she said that would depend on you, you know, the health department and so forth. So what are we looking for? Is there a possibility that we could resume?
We're looking for that curve that we talked about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking for the peak and then the fall. We need to not be having new cases of community-acquired infections happening in our community.
But we're just,
that would be the criteria.
But we're just flatlining from what it sounds like.
We haven't even really started to ramp up yet. You're right. So we have a very low slope on our curve. We want to keep a low slope if possible so that we don't overwhelm our hospital and healthcare delivery system. But what that also means is it may be a longer response because ultimately if the same number of cases happen over time, we are just seeing them spread over a longer time rather than a quick up and then a start to fall.
And
what happens in those areas with the quick up and start to fall is the scenario that we're seeing on the East Coast and in some parts of Europe where the healthcare system's entirely overwhelmed and people die because of that because they can't even access
the care
they need.
And would this be the same to reopen local businesses as well?
There are people who have all the epidemiologic training at the region and the state doing model projections for various thresholds that would allow us to start backing off some of the restrictions that we currently have in place.
Mm-hmm.
And I will let you know that we would not lift everything all at once. It would be a gradual reintroduction with gradual increases, like maybe going back to the no more than 10 people gathering or maybe going back to a restaurant could serve with tables more than 6 feet apart and only household members at a given table, that kind of stuff. That's
a slow reintroduction
of some of the usual practices.
One that you hear also is for those seniors and those that have their immune, you know, compromised and so forth, maybe they would still, you know, stay at home, but everyone else, you know, quote-unquote, the healthy ones would be able to go into businesses and so forth.
That's another part of the gradual reintroduction of, you know, societal function. Yes.
Jack, any questions? Any further questions, Jeff?
No, I sure appreciate your time, Dr. Kerr, in getting these answered. I would strongly encourage everyone out there, as I always do, to continue listening to KVGC and follow the Ledger Dispatch page, follow our pages on Facebook. Mm-hmm. We get our information from Amador Public Health. Certainly follow them. But this misinformation and this panic just, I mean, I understand it's a scary time for a lot of folks, but you do not need to panic. This is
I just said I'm going to miss this other meeting that's less high priority and make sure we address people's concerns right away on this because it's so important that they don't stop taking their medication. They need it.
Gotcha. All right.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Kerr, thank you very much.
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye. Dr. Rita Kerr, Amador County Health Officer. Jack, thanks for stopping by also with that.
Thanks for having me.
All right.